This is Danielle from The Jealous Curator. Thanks for downloading this episode of Art for Your Ear. Today is another interview with an artist that I feel like I quote-unquote know, yet have never said one word to. American artist Amanda Smith is not only a very talented ceramicist, but she's also the mother of two. I cannot wait to ask her how she balances those worlds. Okay, let's call Ohio. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Danielle.
How are you?
It's good. How about yourself?
Good. Are you nervous?
I'm very nervous.
That's okay. Me too. I am so excited that we are finally talking because yet again, I feel like I know you. I've written about you lots. You've been in shows that I've done. You're in my book, and we have never spoken a word to each other.
I know, vice versa, other than like online. But, you know, I creep on your blog and Facebook page, and so I feel like...
I know. It's so funny because we're friends on Facebook, too. So yeah. I see your baby photos and all this stuff. And, yeah, you feel like... thank goodness Facebook. You feel like you know the people so well. And so I'm happy that we're finally actually talking to each other.
Well, me too. And thank you for asking me to do this.
So oh, my gosh.
Very generous.
I love your work so much. It's very easy to write about you and feature you and, show your work wherever I can.
It means a lot because I think you have really great taste and a wide range of artists you can pick from, so it means a lot.
Mm. Oh, anytime. So let's talk about that. Because you do these beautiful ceramic, almost, I always call them narrative slabs. I don't know. What do you call them?
Yeah, I mean, narrative is a word I use a lot because, yeah, they're basically just like, stories. So,
yeah. And they are just, but they're, for everyone listening, I'm going to, of course, as I always do, put up, a whole bunch of Amanda's work on the site so you can see what we're talking about, but it's illustrative, but then 3D because the flowers on the trees are actual little ceramic flowers. And, there's just so much detail. And I always want a small essay written with each one because I want to know what they all mean. I'm going to get to that in a minute. How did you get into ceramics?
Well, actually, that's one of my favorite stories to tell because, it's kind of a cool story because it involves like some great artists that I really admire. But, I, was a tech major in college and sometimes I'm like, what was I thinking switching to art? But I did. And I was like the first person in my family to go to college. So nobody was like, no, don't do that. but I went to art school. I was at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, where I'm from. And it was kind of obligatory that as an art major, you had to take a ceramic class. And I wasn't too excited about that. I mean, it was an elective. I could have chose something else, but I'm like, oh, you know, I'll just make like a pinch pot and a vase and stuff. Well, you know, and then I actually ended up having like this brilliant artist, John Balistrieri, as my mentor and teacher. And I was really it was like 2002, which is like telling you how old I am now, but
that's okay. I'm not going to tell you when I went to school.
he hosted this amazing workshop at Bowling Green where he just invited like the foremost ceramicists in the world. And, Peter Volkos was there and June Kaneko and Dan Anderson and Rudy Audio and, just, you know, I can't even remember everybody. It was like 10 people, Don Wrights. Anyway, it was just a really brilliant workshop. And sadly, in the middle of the workshop, you know, us students have been like kind of helping and with the demos and like watching demos. And I never knew, like I was always a 2D artist. I was painting and drawing and I don't even think I could call myself an artist at that point. But, I didn't know you could paint on clay until I saw Rudy Audio do it. And he had like these boxes and boxes of underglaze. And then, you know, obviously we were all like, just kind of like dumbfounded watching all of these guys work. And I, you know, it was the first I'd been exposed to anything like that. And anyway, the sad part is that Peter Volkos actually ended up passing away during the work, the conference. Yeah, and it was really, you know, awful and sad and hard. But when all of the artists left to go to his wake in California, he was from Oakland, they kind of just left everything there. And we students were able to, like, kind of pick up, you know, the underglazes that they left and things and just kind of tinker around with them. And that's when I first was like, I'm going to try this. And
wow, what a crazy story.
Yeah, I mean, it's really sad that it, I mean, I don't, when I say it's like an interesting story to tell, I don't mean to say like, oh, it's, you know, great that he passed away. That was really an awful thing.
Yeah, of course.
But out of it.
But you got to think he must be wherever he is now thinking how wonderful it was. Like, if, you know, if it was his time,
well, yeah,
all of a sudden, all of these students picked up these things that they might not have otherwise.
Yeah, I mean,
pretty wonderful.
Everybody I went to school with was so impacted by that mm-hmm. event, and it was really huge for us. So, yeah, I hope.
And then did you just sort of not look back after that? Like, with the ceramics just became your thing?
I was totally in love with it, like nothing I'd done before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter that I blew up my whole BFA show in a kiln, and that my whole first year of grad school, I blew everything up and didn't know how. I mean, technically, it is such a challenging medium, and, you know, it might take weeks before you actually know what your piece is going to look like or if it's going to survive after you've been working on it and all of these things, but it didn't matter. I was like so into it. And I actually was John's assistant for a while in undergrad, and I watched him work, and he was a really big influence. So yeah, I just kind of fell in love with it.
Well, speaking of things blowing up, so did you, that's what I think I asked you something like that in Creative Block, just because your work is so detailed and so amazing and so fragile. And I was like, so do you have any kind of anxiety around, like, oh my gosh, I'm working on this, I'm this far down, you know, I've been working on it for X amount of time, like, I better not mess this up? Or are you just, like, zen about it?
Well, the only time I'm like that is if I have a show coming up, like the Creative Block show that happened in December. I was like, oh, you know, I better not blow everything up. But I am not, like, attached to my work. Like, I am my biggest critic, and so I'm, like, always, like, if something breaks or doesn't come out, I'm like, eh, it wasn't that good, I'll just do a different one.
Oh my gosh. That's kind of freeing in a way.
yeah. So I'm not really, like, attached, but when it comes to, like, meeting obligations that are outside of, you know, my expectations, then I get a little, like, please don't blow up.
Yeah, that pressure is suddenly there.
Right.
Well, two of the pieces that I wanted to ask you about, because they are so narrative. And like I said, I'd love it if they came with a little short story beside them so that I knew what they meant. And there's one, I don't actually have the title with me. It's the one with the big limo Hummer.
Oh, yeah.
With the girls with guns. And there's, what is that about? I'm going to put it up on my site so people can see. But what is that piece about?
Well, it's basically just about how ridiculous Hummer limos were. Like, I know that they're not a thing anymore, but, like, back when my husband and I were dating, we would go down to LA and visit friends, and we'd always see these, like, giant Hummer limos, and we're like, you know, it was our kind of a big joke with us, and we thought it was really funny because we're like, that is, like, the epitome of like ostentatiousness,
yeah.
conspicuous consumerism, you know. So it's kind of just about that. It's just like a look at, this is like a joke, and it's kind of like, I was also looking at a lot of those, you know, Persian and Mughal miniature paintings where there are like these processions with palanquins and, you know, the carriages and elephants and horses and everything that kind of usher in the
right. Hence the procession of little girls with guns and drums and whatnot.
The important people. So it's like the protection and the celebration and just like in our era, it's kind of like the a palanquin could be replaced with a Humvee limo.
That's right. With Kim and Kanye in the back.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Without naming names, but I just totally did it anyway. I wonder if I'm allowed to say their names without paying a lot of money. I have to cut that out.
Actually.
And I asked you this a while ago. I forget why we were talking about that hot punch piece, but there's always a whole bunch of little girls in your work.
Yeah, yeah.
And why is that again?
Well, I debated on how much to say because I'm like, if my dad gonna listen to this, but essentially, like, that hot punch piece is kind of influenced by him too. Like, he had some substance abuse problems and still does. And when we were growing up, and he wasn't around really, and my mom was, and I had three sisters. And so I just felt like my household and everything I knew was just ultra femme.
Right.
Like, she would dress us in little braids and fancy frilly dresses and like buckle shoes and earrings and, you know, the whole bows in the hair and everything. So just girls were my vocabulary. It's like how my characters that I'm comfortable telling stories with, I guess.
Right. And did you like the bows and the frilly dresses?
Oh, I loved it.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, it seems like you love them because they're so beautifully drawn and painted. And if you didn't like them, if you were a tomboy who was forced into them, perhaps, like, is it a positive thing or a negative thing?
Yeah. And I mean, like, I've never, being an artist and coming from like a working class family, have never had a lot of money to kind of indulge my fashion fetishes. So it's like I would always like draw on them outfits that I really wanted but couldn't afford if I saw something like on a blog or in a store and I really wanted it. I'd just be like, well, they can have it.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Well, and speaking of super cute little girls in frilly dresses, your daughter is one of the most insanely cute little kids ever.
Oh, thank you.
And every time I see her on Facebook, she's got the best glasses, first of all. They're like these vintage, retro, like cat-eye glasses. She's four.
Yeah.
And she always has the best, like, little vintage dresses and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big thrifter.
And is she girly? Does she like the little dresses and stuff?
You know what? She has never cared what I put her in at all. Not at all. But she's actually not that girly of a girl. Like, I was all about My Little Ponies and Barbies, and her big interests are lizards and tornadoes and Rudolph for some reason.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah. So,
and she just became a big sister.
Yeah. So I had a baby boy, which kind of changes everything in my little girl world, right?
That's right. Well, you can put him in frilly dresses for a while. He's not going to know. When I had my son, I thought for sure I was having a girl, and our name that we had picked for a girl was Ruby. And I found these little, like, infant little Ruby slippers, like the little, slip on Mary Jane's. And I wanted to buy them so badly. And then when I was halfway through my pregnancy, found out that it was a boy, and I was like, should I still buy the Ruby slippers and just take a bunch of pictures and then he'll never know?
Oh, I love that. I love it.
But I didn't.
You picture those little feet, and you wouldn't even have to tell him it was him.
Exactly.
Just like, aren't a baby.
I know. They were so cute. So I missed that whole thing. That's too bad. But the reason I bring up your kids is just that I think I love that you a lot of people think of artists as childless. And, lots of them are, but lots of them aren't. And I think that I know I certainly used having a kid as an excuse for a long time not to make anything because, you're super busy. You're really, really tired. And suddenly that priority changes. And so I wanted to talk to you about, are you doing anything right now? I mean, he's 6 months old, so.
Right. Well, I think it's really interesting that you like fault yourself, like I used this as an excuse, because it is an excuse and it's a legit one, and a really good one, because, you know, I haven't made anything in 6 months since he's been born, you know,
because you're a wonderful mother.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I hope so. But, yeah, like when you're breastfeeding, you can't just like pass them off and go in your studio or whatever. You can't, I mean, like, it is intense. And, I know a lot of people don't like to admit that trade-off. Like, I know, I think I just read something about Tracy Emin getting in all that trouble for saying that artists can't be mothers.
Oh, or yes, she didn't. I read that article.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I don't know. I think there was a little truth to that. I think maybe some exceptional people in exceptional cases can do it. Like, they mentioned Tara Donovan, which she's exceptional, right? Like,
yes.
I feel like for me, it's definitely a trade-off. You either have the money to get childcare or family that can do it, or it's a studio time sacrifice, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I remember when I was just got pregnant with Gemma, and I was actually, I just had my first solo show. I was working with galleries on both coasts, and I had opportunities to like do things for like this music video that I really wanted to do. But then I had a newborn, and I'm like, I can't do it all. Like, my husband had to work, and I couldn't afford to have somebody come watch her, and my family was far away, and I had to basically say no, no, no to all this stuff. And it kind of like, you know, it is sacrifice if you do it.
And how did you feel about that? Like, well, were you so like, I know when I had Charlie, I had left advertising, and I was fine with that. I was so wrapped up in being his mom, and I loved it so much that it was fine. It wasn't until he was a bit older, and like I say, like the excuse thing, it didn't even occur to me till he was about three, and then I actively did use it as an excuse.
Right,
like, I could have, because I know when Gemma was, you know, not a newborn anymore, and Ari wasn't here yet, you were working again.
Yeah.
And you made a priority for it.
Well, I am really lucky. I have this great husband, and he is also an artist and an art teacher.
Let's plug him. Let's plug him.
Yeah. Well, Casey Jack Smith.
There we go.
And I just, you know, he really keeps me going on that path. Like, he is my biggest support. And he also, he's like, you know, anytime I have off is shared time off. So since he teaches, we have summers. And when he was teaching at the university, then we had really flexible schedules. And, you know, our studio time was always shared. What was, you know, his, he would divide and became ours. And so actually today was his first day off school, and I got in the studio this morning, and I'm like planning on his summer vacation, like making the most of that. So,
ooh, I can't wait to see what you make.
Well, thank you. So I think that, you know, you really have to strategize and prioritize and have family or, you know, a spouse or a partner or somebody who's willing to help you be a mother and an artist, because there's no way anybody could do either one on their own. I don't know how they do.
I know. Well, I not to plug Creative Block here, but I asked you about this because I think Gemma was like two when you did this interview, maybe.
Maybe, two or three. Yeah, I think that sounds right.
And so I asked you about it, and I just want to read your answer because I thought it was so insightful. Which one was it? There was two mom questions. Do you see your life as an artist and your life as a mother as two separate things, or do they go hand in hand? And you said, I see them as totally different. Although I absolutely love my life as a mother and I consider it more important than anything else I do, much of my time is filled with mundane, repetitive tasks like making lunch, giving baths, shuttling to doctor's appointments, or doing puzzles. On the other hand, I consider being an artist, and I hope artists will forgive me for this, a pretty selfish endeavor in comparison. But for me, it's a necessary selfish. When I'm making art, I feel like I'm getting in touch with myself. When I'm being a mom, it's all about bonding with my little girl.
Yeah.
I thought that was such a beautiful answer. And then one more I have to read too is, which is huge for so many people that I know read my blog and that I've met and talked to at events, mom guilt. Do you, do you ever feel quote unquote mom guilt when you're away at the studio? I loved your answer. No. I am a stay-at-home mom and I'm with Gemma 24/7. My studio time is, only around 10 to 15 hours a week at this point, so I relish my time to be creative. I consider it my ultimate indulgence. I'd rather go to the studio than to a movie or out for dinner or almost anything. The other reason I don't feel guilty about my studio time is that Gemma is with her dad, and when I'm in there, she's really daddy's little girl, which is so wonderful. I love that, you know, you can appreciate that time, relish it, and also know, because you've got a great partner, that she's fine. Right. And you can go in there and not be guilty.
Yeah. So I guess I'm lucky again, but
That is really a wonderful thing. And you know, if whoever's listening to this, if you are at home with a new baby or a 2-year-old or whatever, I just think that, you know, Amanda, I think you're just such a good example of priorities. And yeah, right now with a newborn, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think of babies and kids and child rearing as an investment, right? Like you put in this time up front, and before you know it, they're gone. They're in school, and you know, it's like, I don't know. For me, I have all that time.
Yeah, I always thought that. I mean, I only have one, and I was a creative director at an ad agency, and I quit to be home with him for 5 years. And people thought I was crazy. You know, they're like, oh, you're at the top of your career. And I was like, I don't care. Like, we knew at that point we were only having one. And I was like, I am going to roll around in this and love every single minute for those 5 years, because they're only little for such a short time.
It's true.
You know, and now he's 8 and off at school and playing soccer with his friends. And I'm like, do you want mommy to come with? And he's like, no, that's okay.
I love that, Danielle, because I'm already getting that with Gemma, and I totally, like, you've invested so much, and they're like, all right, see you later, you
know? Yeah, and you're like, I brought you into this world. Yeah, I know, it's hilarious. But yeah, I wouldn't trade it for the world. And now that he, you know, they're only little, exactly that. Love the time when they're little, and know that it's for such a short time, and suddenly they're in school, and you're like, oh, no. Well, now what do I do with myself?
Exactly.
And suddenly now I've got decades and decades to do whatever it is I like. Exactly. So if you're feeling stressed,
you're doing so good at filling that time. I love what you've done with yourself. So.
It's quite funny. Yes, I'm a little bit busy, but it's great. And I love Charlie to watch what I'm doing too, you know, and to see that you can decide to do something and then go do it. Right.
Exactly.
So I need to do a little speed round with you.
Okay.
We've gotten to know you a little bit now. Now comes the real stuff.
Spontaneous answers, quick.
Oh boy, they're so silly, but they're fun. Okay, so ready?
Yeah.
Would you prefer to live in a big city or a little town?
Oh, maybe in the country.
Okay. Cat or dog?
Neither.
Oh. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate Dora the Explorer?
Oh, geez, an 11, maybe?
Favorite TV show? Like, guilty pleasure favorite TV show?
Man, that's so hard. Well, right now, House of Cards.
Okay. Okay. If you could go on a coffee date with any celebrity, who would it be?
Man, that is rough. That one I would need time to think about.
It's called the speed round.
I know. Because I'm not a real Ira Glass. Oh, yeah, that's an easy one. Yeah.
That's actually, can I come?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great. When you and Ira book that, I'm coming. That's it. That's it for my speed round.
Awesome. Well, I hope I wasn't very speedy, but
I think you passed. I think those were all very solid answers. And I think we're good. And you know what? I can't wait to see what you make this summer.
Oh, well, thanks, Danielle.
Will you keep me posted?
I'm going to go, I think, more of a illustratory route and do works on paper.
Oh.
So, yeah. I think Casey and I are going to do some collaborations and some individual work and kind of like, you know, I'll launch a little Etsy site or something where we can sell prints and things like
that. Oh, that's great. Oh, I can't wait. Do you think it'll still look like your little girls and things like that, just not ceramic?
Different? I don't know what we're coming up with. Well,
that's exciting and fun.
Well, thanks. Yeah. And I mean, I'll always have my little girls and my ceramics that I want to do and go back to. But I think this is just like a little branch off of for, you know, this summer or next year or something to try and launch something different. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's a lot quicker and simpler and less toxic than sure. getting into a ceramic studio with glazes and things and a newborn in tow.
Exactly. That's another consideration. So
yeah. Well, thank you so much for, I know you probably have babies to take care of and things to do. And I'm so, when I was going to ask you to do this, I thought, what are the chances she's going to say yes with a new baby and a four-year-old kicking around? But I'm so glad that you were able to take half an hour and talk to me.
Well, it's so nice of you. I could never say no to you. You've done so much for me, and I really do appreciate it. So,
anytime. We'll do it again.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Love to all your little family.
All right. Vice versa. Thanks, Danielle.
Okay. Bye. Okay. Wow, I loved every second of that. What an origin story. Now I'm kind of wishing that I'd taken a ceramics course as an elective. And to all of you artists / moms out there, I hope Amanda's experience hit home with you. I know it did with me. All right, the next podcast is already underway and will be ready for your ears next Saturday. Thanks again for listening. Bye.